Hello and welcome to the latest edition of Football Talk from the Yorkshire Post, where we'll be discussing some of the latest talking points from the world of football with members of our football writing team. On this week's episode, we're joined by Chief Football Writer for the Yorkshire Post, Stuart Rayner, and Football Writer for the Yorkshire Post, Will Mottrell, to discuss all of the latest developments affecting our local clubs. Don't forget you can keep up to date with all the football news across Yorkshire and beyond by logging onto our website at yp.sport@nationalworld.com, as well as checking out our various Twitter feeds, the main one being at @YPSport. If you search for Yorkshire Post Sport, Yorkshire Post Football, or even Sheffield Sport on Facebook, you can find us there as well. And if you have any questions for our writers, you can get in touch using those various Twitter or Facebook pages, or email us directly with the subject matter as footballtalkpodcast@yp.sport@nationalworld.com.
yorkshirepost.co.uk.
As mentioned earlier in the intro, this week we're joined by Chief Football Writer for the Yorkshire Post, Stuart Rayner, and Football Writer for the Yorkshire Post, Leon Wobshaw. Good morning, guys.
Morning.
Right, this week we had a mix of FA Cup, EFL Trophy and league action, with Sheffield Wednesday earning a playoff, a replay with Coventry City after a 1-1 draw at Hillsborough. In the Championship, Huddersfield Town had to settle for a point in their 1-1 draw with Queen's Park Rangers, and we'll be covering the latest developments in this week's podcast. Barnsley fell to a 2-1 defeat when they hosted Exeter City in League 1, and in League 2, Doncaster Rovers fell to a 5-1 defeat when they hosted Stockport County, and Bradford City fell to a 2-0 defeat when they visited Swindon Town. Now, we'll be covering both Bradford City and Doncaster Rovers later on in this week's episode. However, before that, as I mentioned earlier, we're going to be covering the developments following Huddersfield Town's 1-1 draw with Queen's Park Rangers, which is that following that result, news came out from the club that Darren Moore had been relieved of his duties as head coach after just 7 months of being in that position. Now, Stuart, just last week we mentioned an article that you wrote in which you described the relationship between Huddersfield Town and Darren Moore as a marriage which was in need of a spark. Unfortunately, here we are a week later and it just hasn't worked out for them. What do you make of the club's decision, and have there been any names connected with taking the role?
Well, yeah, you know, as I sort of alluded to in that article and in that podcast, the writing had been on the wall for a while in terms of, I remember, you know, covering a horrendous week where they conceded 4 against Cardiff and 4 against Leeds, and writing then that it felt like Darren Moore was sort of almost fighting for his job, and I think it was the Leeds game was only his seventh game in charge. But that said, I mean, there's been plenty of managers in the past who've started badly and turned it around. So I think Huddersfield, you know, were right to give him a bit of time to do something about it. As I said, as recently as that Plymouth game, there just wasn't that impetus, that attacking intent about the team. But I just think the timing of the decision was wrong. I think you can go one of two ways, and they've managed to fall between the two. They've backed Darren Moore with, you know, quite a significant outlay by their standards in the transfer market this season, window. And they either needed to give him chance to show what he could do with that, you know, particularly given the injuries he's had, or if they didn't believe he was the right man, they needed to make the decision earlier so that the new man could have actually had some say in where that money was spent, because now we're in a situation where there won't be a new manager in until the transfer window shut. And it may be that he looks at some of these expensive signings and says, I don't fancy that player. That player doesn't fit into the way I want to play. So whichever way you want to go, in terms of they should have sacked him earlier or they should have given him more time, to fall in the middle of that and to sack someone on 29th of January, I think it was, to me just did not make sense. Whatever you think of the decision, I think you've really got to question the timing. I mean, Leon wrote the other day, I think it's fair to say, Leon, that you're firmly in the camp that he should have been given more time. And to be honest, I'm always inclined that way too. Sorry, Leon.
Yeah, well, I wouldn't.
Yeah, I wouldn't say sort of firmly come. I just think he should have. It just seems sensible just to give him a little bit more time. I totally agree with what you said, Stuart. I mean, he's obviously they've sanctioned two or three big money deals. Obviously, the Balkers coming, the Dutch defender, the two lads up front. You know, in the you know, in the press releases announcing the, you know, the signings, there was, you know, quite a bit of quite a few quotes from Darren Moore, and he certainly had an input there. And I just think, look, I mentioned in the comment piece, I think it's Huddersfield's prerogative to do what they want to do, and they're obviously worried. 3 wins in 23 is pretty poor. I think there's quite a lot of mitigating circumstances. You know, there's the stick to be more with, you know, in regards to the sort of a attacking football. I get that on some levels, but I think he was just forced into the way, to a certain way of playing with the, you know, with the horrendous injuries that they had, you know, in mid to late autumn. You know, we're talking double figure counts, and, you know, as we know, Stuart, it's a hell of a league, the Championship, and you know, it's no forgiver of reputations, and, you know, every point's a scrap, and especially when you're low down on numbers. So I think he was forced into play that way. Obviously, there was a lot of talk beforehand about addressing it in January. They've done that. Then, obviously, had an injury, you know, a little minor injury to Radulovic, which was, you know, unfortunate. But I just think a little bit more time to try and bed these signings in, you know, the 2, 3, 4 games maybe, and then, you know, one or two players back. If it's still not happening for Huddersfield and Moore, then I would, you know, I think it would have been a fairer time to judge. But, you know, that said, you know, we're not sat in the chair. We're not looking at, you know, 3 wins in 23, looking over at shoulders into the relegation zone. So I accept Huddersfield right to make the call. But personally, I would have given him a little bit more time. But, you know, time will tell.
Yeah, I do think as well. I mean, we're not talking about a young, inexperienced manager, but nevertheless, I do think there's quite a bit Darren Moore can learn from this experience. I think he talked a lot about front foot football, but we saw very little of it. And I think in his next job, I think he needs to just throw off the shackles a little bit and be a bit more positive. It might not actually earn him any more points than the way he's gone about things at the moment, but it might buy him a bit more time and a bit more sympathy on the terraces, because you just got the impression at Huddersfield that, yes, anyone following Neil Warnock was going to have a tough job, because Warnock was so popular and there was no clamour for him to go when he did. You know, it was only a little bit like when Marcelo Bielsa went to Leeds, in the sense that it's very rare to see a manager sacked when the fans aren't actually calling for his head. But that said, I don't think Moore did enough to win over the supporters. And, you know, ultimately, it is the supporters' club. You should at least be trying to play the way the supporters want. And, you know, I remember that Cardiff game I mentioned earlier, about 10 minutes before kickoff. It just felt so flat. You know, it was almost as if you turned up on the wrong day. There was so little enthusiasm about a relatively new manager and his team, and I think the new man who comes in has got to just stir that up in the supporters in the way that obviously Warnock did last February. However he goes about it, just get people enthused about their football again, because that seemed to be the biggest issue of Darren Moore's time. And I say Moore did struggle in the same way that Warnock did at the start of the season, for a lack of investment in the summer. But the new man's got these new bodies in. I say the question is whether these bodies actually fit in with the way he wants to play. But hopefully somebody can come in. We can see a bit of that new manager bounce. We can see a bit of positivity and things pick up. You know, there's been a few names mentioned, familiar names to us, like Paul Heckingbottom and Michael Duff. There's been a few names who've managed in the Premier League have been mentioned. I'm not sure if some of those are wishful thinking or not, but say I think whoever it is needs to learn from the mistakes of the Darren Moore reign and just come in with a bit more positivity. It might even be sort of a bit naive at times, but just to have a bit more bit more impetus about them than unfortunately Darren Moore did.
Yeah, he just didn't connect with the Huddersfield fans, did he, Stuart? For one reason or another. I personally think, thinking about obviously the game at the end, the QPR game, you know, ultimately did for him, and I think he was, you could have a little bit of sympathy for him and his coaching staff there. You know, it was just the fine lines, wasn't it? It was a scruffy, fortuitous goal for the QPR. How different it could have been if they'd held on to that. And speaking to Darren in his pre-match the QPR, you know, I spoke to him and he was talking about just one catalyst, one good result, 3 points, things can turn. And maybe that might have been it if they got obviously going QPR and if they could have held out and got that win, but obviously they didn't. And I think, sort of looking at it, I think the Plymouth performance, I know you went to that game, Plymouth hadn't, I don't think they've still not won away from home all season. I think that's the one that maybe if Moore does look back, he'll probably lament, you know, the result of performance in that particular game. But yeah, I mean, I think, you know, on a human level, I mean, a lot of Huddersfield fans agree with the move to get rid of Moore, and that's fair enough. But I think it's in terms of from the powers that be above, I think they did show, my opinion, a little bit of a lack of class towards him. You know, we've spoken about Kevin Nagle. He wears his tart on his sleeve. He's interacting with the fans, and you know, it's refreshing on some levels, but I personally think there's a time and a place for making statements on social media as a chairman. You know, and it really did ratchet the pressure up, talking about a, you know, must-win game, you know, openly. I mean, did he really need to do that? And I thought it was pretty distasteful as well after, you know, pretty much after the match, when he was speaking about the result and the performance, and you know, having a little dig for claiming, you know, hanging on for a draw, that sort of thing. And you know, I thought it showed a little bit of lack of courtesy to Darren and his team there, and it wasn't particularly professional. But
no, sorry,
either by, I fully respect Huddersfield's prerogative to make the call. No problem with that. It's just some of the elements of the way it done didn't sit well with me.
I think part of the problem as well was a bit of inconsistency, because at the same time as he was saying it was a must-win game, there was a lot of talk in January about the manager's not going right now. And obviously, it hangs on your definition of right now. I mean, to be honest, when he said that after the Plymouth game, those two words sort of leapt out at me. But nevertheless, he was quite strong, quite frequent, about saying that he was going to stick with the manager. So he sort of put himself into a position where whatever he did after the QPR game, he looked like he'd contradicted himself a bit. So again, yeah, you know, yeah. I don't mean this patronisingly, but Kevin Nagle's quite new to English football. There's things for him to learn about this. You know, nobody at any late age reaches the point where they should stop learning. And I think all sides have got something to take from this. But yeah, hopefully this can, much as I'm unhappy with the timing of it, hopefully this can just draw a line under things and we can get a much more, one way or another, a much more buoyant, much more positive John Smith Stadium, as we saw this time last year or thereabouts, for the run into the season, because they are going to need it. I mean, they have been drifting along quite worryingly for quite a long time, and they do need that kick, wherever it comes from.
Yeah, they certainly need that short-term hit, if you like, Stuart, don't they? I mean, obviously they spoke in the leaving statement about, you know, addressing the short-term and talk of a tap-minded football, this, that. But I think in the here and now, they're in a reasonably similar situation, probably not quite as bad as they were when Neil Warnock took over from Mark Fotheringham. I mean, there were sort of correlations, really. I mean, I remember the... I did the last two games of the Fotheringham era, and they obviously conceded a late goal to Blackpool, I remember, and you know, a little bit of links with what happened with Moore at QPR. But yeah, fundamentally, they need to get some results reasonably sharpish, don't they? I mean, I think the philosophy and all that side of it can sort of, that can be parked for, you know, the initial It's about Huddersfield, you know, getting out of trouble. And you know, Morey, he never quite got that conundrum between sort of pragmatic and getting results with a little bit of style. Didn't quite get the balance right. You just hope that his successor, you know, can do that. And it's still a reasonably attractive job, isn't it? I think if they did manage to get Paul Heckingbottom, that would be a pretty shrewd appointment. He lives reasonably locally. He's, from what I can gather, he's eager to get back in with the right opportunity, whether it's sort of now or, you know, further down the line in the summer. But you'd think it would be, it could well be attractive to him. John Hughes is another interesting candidate on the Midlands scene. I dare say he's pretty well known to you know, Mark Cartwright, the sporting director, who's got a lot of links in that part of the world. Other candidates too. So you just hope for Huddersfield to make the right appointment, just get that little bit of sugar rush of early results to sort of buy them a bit of time and a bit more confidence and surety about the league position. And you know, if they have a good start with the successor, then they can sort of bring in the stuff about attacking football, this and that. Because you know, first and foremost in the Championship, when you're in Huddersfield's position, it's about staying up.
Yeah, I mean, that's the other strange thing about the timing, really. The game at home to Sheffield Wednesday on Saturday just leaps out at you at such a massive game. So to go into that with a caretaker manager, I mean, I'm not saying by any means I'd have fancied their chances with Darren Moore in charge, you know, the way things are going right now. But to go in with a caretaker manager just seems almost reckless, you know. And it does mean that the new manager's first games, assuming he comes in quickly off the back of that, you're looking at Southampton away, Sunderland at home, Hull at home, Watford away, Leeds away. That is not an easy start for the new guy. So when Leon talks about sugar rush, they are definitely going to need that. You know, as the flip side of it is, of course, with such difficult games, if you can pull a result out of one of those from nowhere, however you do it, you know, the boost it gives you is that much greater. So that, you know, been quite negative about them so far. That's the kind of positive side about it, I guess.
I don't think there'll be much attack minded football at Southampton, to be quite honest.
James. I would hope not, to be honest. It could be quite messy if there is.
Yes, I would certainly be pragmatic in that game. But, well, I mean, looking at some of those games, I mean, I suppose the beauty of the Championship is, you know, I'm not necessarily thinking about that game, because I think Huddersfield will do really well to get a point. But I think one or two of the others mentioned, you know, the Championship being the Championship, you wouldn't you know, disregard Huddersfield getting a few results from somewhere. I think one thing I would say, I agree with what Stuart said about the game on Saturday, such a huge game, you know, a little bit of a risk to go in with a caretaker manager. But you know, if you're looking at it on the other side of the coin, John Worthington's, you know, is a Huddersfield man as such. He's from the Spenbury area, played for Town as a teenager, you know, in that side that sort of came through after the, you know, the administration times in the noughties. He's got a big feel for the club, local lad, popular player, and yeah, we all wish him well in that regard, and I'm sure that the supporters will get behind him.
And next we turn our attention to Sheffield United, who fell out of the FA Cup after a 5-1 defeat at the hands of Brighton and Hove Albion, which was then followed up by their 3-2 defeat against Crystal Palace. Now, what did you make of their performances, and what could we expect in their game against Aston Villa, Leon?
Yeah, we've talked about it many times. Stuart's seen a fair bit more of Sheffield United than myself, but, you know, it's just getting defensive consistency. They didn't play particularly bad against Brighton on Saturday, but at the end of the day, they still conceded 5 goals, and they've gone to Crystal Palace in a bigger game in the greater scheme of things, and they've obviously taken the lead twice and seen Palace back on 2 occasions that then go on to get a winner. I mean, you know, Chris Wilder, he's a big priority before the deadline on Thursday. No bones about it. He's brought in a appointing a new goalkeeper, you know, bringing another option on the right hand side of central defence without John Egan and Chris Basham, two very experienced players. And you know, we've spoken consistently about the soft goals and the preventable goals that they've conceded, but I just think it goes to show in the Premier League, you just got to be so on point. Any little error will be punished, and you've got to be right on the money in terms of you know, the way that you mark someone, your distances, and your concentration level. Because actually in the Championship, you can get away with more things, but you know, in the big league, even against modest sides, if you like, in Crystal Palace, they will have enough quality to punish you. So you hope from Wilder's perspective and Sheffield United, they can have addressed that by the time the window shuts. They must have been linked to a few players in that regard. Joe Worrell, who's not having a good time of it at Nottingham Forest, one or two of those, Chris Method mentioned. Yeah, they could really do for me another senior defensive option, because he's certainly got going forward, they've got a bit more of the mojo back, haven't they? It's been a decent start for Ben Brereton Diaz. Obviously James McTee, he's a quality player, and Wilder's getting a bit of a tune out of him. But it's more defensively where my concerns are.
Yeah, I think it's just a sobering reminder of where Sheffield United are. You know, we're not talking about the Derby County team of years ago, who are so far out of their depth, but they're consistently not up to it on those little defensive details that make such a big difference. And I think the playing staff and the football staff can't be too realistic about it. They've got to, you know, keep up the fight. But I think the rest of us, in judging the job Chris Wilder's doing, judging the job the players are doing, we've got to have that realism in mind and you know, not judge them too harshly. I think when the story of the season is written, I think we'll look back and say what a big blow losing John Egan was. I'm not saying that they would have stayed up with John Egan in the side, because I'm not sure he could cover all of those deficiencies. But I think it certainly would have made them a lot more competitive. But to be honest, lots of teams in the division have that sort of story. I mean, you know, Manchester City have had half a season without Kevin De Bruyne, for goodness sake. Obviously, the lower down the leagues you go, generally, the less resources you have to deal with those things. That's the issue. But yeah, I do feel that Sheffield United are better for Chris Wilder coming in that they are more competitive in matches, but ultimately not competitive enough to stay up. I hope that this defensive signing comes in and it flicks a switch and it makes a difference. But as I said about Egan, it's a big ask for one player to come in and make that difference. But they've just got to keep fighting. They've just got to keep carrying on regardless. You know, they have picked up a few results in this time. Not enough, but they've just got to plug at it and hope for some luck. You know, hope that, I don't know, not wanting to wish it on them, but Luton have a stroke of bad luck like that. Hope that all these FFP investigations, you know, suddenly throw things up in the air for Forest and Everton, and just hope something falls into place. But it does feel like hope against hope already at this stage of the season, rather than a realistic belief that they can stay up.
Yeah, I think, to be fair, the supporters, Stuart, I think they're quite realistic as well. You know,
they're pragmatic
about it. You know, but what they won't tolerate is not seeing a Sheffield United side who show those characteristics that we've spoken about, that we associate. You know, the sort of heart, resolve, organisation, sort of, you know, intensity, aggression, that sort of thing. No, but to be fair to Wilder, is they've looked a bit more at it in that regard, haven't they? But you know, I think I mentioned that last week as well. People have got to realise that his job is pretty much twofold, isn't it? He's obviously, you know, in an ideal world, he'll, you know, there'll be another a great escape like he had when he was a player all those years ago. But I think the bigger picture is about looking to build for next season, trying to have a look at some of these young players, which he has done, to be fair. Andre Brooks looks like he, early days, but it looks like he, Sheffield United have certainly unearthed the talent there. Will Asula as well, he's a little bit raw from what I've seen of him, don't get me wrong, but he has got something about him. He's a big strong lad with a yard of pace, and he obviously got another FA Cup goal on Saturday. So yeah, I think that's as much part of Wilder's brief as well. To obviously he'll be trying to keep the club up, that goes without saying, but trying to get some, you know, if they do go down, which I think if you were a betting man, you'd probably go that way, wouldn't you? You know, to look for some hope for next season, some players who he can build on and use hopefully next season in a tilt for promotion. But as Stuart said, they've still got something to fight for, and they've got a journey on.
Yeah, and you know, they're human beings. We saw them ground down towards the end of Paul Heckingbottom's time, but ultimately, even if they're thinking selfishly, they've got things to play for themselves. You know, some of those players will want to prove that when Sheffield United go down, they should stay in the Premier League. You know, some of them have got contracts to play for, whether that be at Bramall Lane or elsewhere. And some of them, you know, should just be looking at it, thinking, I want to be part of this, you know, Chris Wilder promotion push next season. I think they've all got to show, you know, professionalism and fight. And as Leon says, that has been the really encouraging characteristic of Chris Wilder's time in charge. And I think if that disappears, you can maybe forgive it in the last couple of weeks, but if that disappears too easily, I think that will have a big bearing on that rebuild. So it's really important that they pay back those supporters who, as Leon said, have been really supportive and really tried to get behind them. You know, pay them back with at least some courageous performances. And then there's something to work with in this rebuild, which, you know, even if they were to stay up, is going to be needed.
Yeah.
And if they just want something in the here and now, quickly, sure, they just have to look at Luton. I mean, I know they probably don't want to. And that result the other night when hammered Brighton 4-0, you know, certainly didn't need that, but you know, it does show what can be achieved, doesn't it?
Absolutely. You know, we talk about Sheffield United having so little resources and all that sort of thing, but it's not like Luton are chucking money around. They're not this season Nottingham Forest. So yeah, it is a really good, should be a really good inspiration to them. You're right there.
And next we turn our attention to Leeds United, who will have to face a replay with Plymouth Argyle after playing out a 1-1 draw in the first leg at Elland Road, which saw Jadon Anthony put the Whites ahead after 31 minutes before the visitors scored their equaliser in the 73rd minute of the game. Now, what was your assessment of the game, and turning to their league duties, how do you look at their upcoming game away at Bristol City, Stuart?
Well, they're certainly making things harder for themselves, aren't they, Mark? I mean, they already had a difficult February as it is, and they've lined up another trip to Plymouth Argyle. So, you know, they've got a month where they've got two trips to Plymouth, one to Bristol City, one to Swansea. If they win the Plymouth FA Cup tie, they've got a trip to Chelsea or Aston Villa. And even their home games, they've got Yorkshire Derby against Rotherham. Obviously, Rotherham won't make that easy for them. Saw that in the reverse fixture. And game against Leicester City, rumour has it, are quite decent as well. So it's a heck of a month for them. It's a real test. But I think the thing they need to take from that, and you know, even to a degree, the Norwich game on the previous Wednesday, which they got away with, is that they need to be more ruthless when they're on top. You know, if you'd said to me in the first half, Leeds aren't going to win this, I'd have struggled to believe you. Once it gets to half-time, there's that thought in your mind about they've been so good and they're only 1-0 up, they could chuck this away. But nevertheless, if you just looked at the football, they were so much better. You know, Jorginho Rute was excellent for them, and loads of good, you know, attacking play, created a lot more chances than they did with the possession against Norwich. So that was a step forward. But as I say, they let Plymouth on off the hook. I think Plymouth only had two shots on target all day and scored one of them. But that happens sometimes. If you tempt fate like that, you can't complain when it comes back to bite you. So I say it's like we were talking about with Sheffield United. It's a detail rather than a sort of, you know, big fundamental problem that they've got. But it's just something they need to sharpen up on. And I say that the net result of it is that this month, which was already difficult, is going to be a real test of their squad strength and their character. I believe they can come through it. I didn't come away from that game with worries so much as just frustrations that they're making life harder for themselves. And as Leon's already alluded to, the way Southampton are playing at the moment, plus the way Leicester are playing, you can't afford to be that charitable if you want to avoid the playoffs, which any Leeds United fan with all their bad memories of playoff football, you'd really rather go up automatically.
Yeah, I think it's going to test the dressing room this month, isn't it, Stuart? I mean, sometimes these little spells of games where there's, you know, a few long trips almost concertinaed into each other can make it even stronger, can't it? You know, if you can get a few, this time of year as well, if you can get a few, chisel a few results, how it all adds to the pot and the camaraderie in there. I think the disappointing, a little bit of a disappointing thing, obviously, wasn't at the game and you were there, was, you know, it was a good chance for Joe Parole. He's obviously had the big fillip of the, with a penalty in the game against Preston relatively recently. You know, he needed that boost and, provided that with himself. You know, a chance to, you know, kick on and really get a confidence rush. And, you know, when I saw him, by all accounts, it was pretty disappointing against Plymouth. So, that was a little bit of a letdown. And Willie Gonto as well, you know, two opportunities for them to really put the hand up there and they passed up that chance. But, maybe they'll get a chance in the replay.
Yeah, no, I think that's a very good point, Leon. And those are precisely the two individuals I'd point to. You know, we talk about the squad that they have. It was okay on paper, but those players have to perform like Joel Perreault and Willie Nonto. You know, Nonto was absolutely convinced in August that he was a Premier League player and should be playing Premier League football. Well, when you get a chance like Saturday, you really have to prove it. You know, I'm sure Perreault in particular will come good at some point. He's just going through a difficult patch, but nevertheless, it must be annoying as a manager when presumably you've had these guys knocking on your door saying, you know, why am I not playing? You give them the chance to make the case and they don't take it. You know, the flip side was he didn't have an outstanding performance, but Jadon Anthony scored an outstanding goal. So he at least did sort of underline his credentials a bit. But yeah, those some of those guys who have, you know, not been ticking over as they'd like, not had the opportunities, they are going to have to step up to the plate, because say with all these games and particularly the travel added in, they are going to need to rotate the squad. And you know, as we speak now, Leeds are in the market for a lot of similar defenders to Sheffield United, and you do just feel they would really benefit from just adding, you know, particularly a fullback. Doesn't even, because of Sam Byron's versatility, almost doesn't matter whether they're a left or a right back, but just one extra fullback into the mix would give you that bit of reassurance. But you know, it seems pretty clear that from the way things have gone so far, that as per usual, Leeds aren't going to do things the easy way. But what they have been good at so far is just making the most of what they've got and getting on with it. And I think that's going to be the story of February.
And now, as I hinted at the beginning of the podcast, we now turn to Bradford City, who overcame Doncaster Rovers with a 1-0 victory in the quarterfinals of the Bristol Street Motors Trophy. This now sees them through to the semi-finals of the competition, while Doncaster Rovers will turn their attention back to the league. What were your thoughts on the game, and what can both teams take from their performances, Leon?
Yeah, well, Bradford are keeping the sort of competitive juices going for another season. They've got into the semi-final of the competition for the first time. Yes, we've spoken about it many times. It's a much maligned competition, but you know, it offers a day out at Wembley. And Grant McCann has been quick enough to point that out on a number of occasions, and I think he won it with Peterborough. So yeah, it was timely from a bad perspective. They'd won one in eight games beforehand, and they came into it apparently on the back of a lousy performance against Swindon. So yeah, there were some good individual highlights as well. First goal of the season from Harry Chapman, well struck free kick. It was good to see Jake Run get a run out, his first at Valley Parade for, I think it's almost a year and a half or just under. And he had his moments, a couple of good runs in from the left and a decent early chance. And he got a decent reception when he made way at the end as well. And it's good to see all the sort of brouhaha around him and Carlisle and his future. Hopefully Park, because he can be an important player for Bradford in this sort of run to the end of the season. He does offer something different. So good on that level from a Bradford perspective. Less so with what I thought was a silly dismissal from Andy Cook. An experienced pro, he should know better. He got into a bit of a tangle with a couple of Doncaster defenders, both North East lads like himself, and got a booking, in each of the challenges, and he could have no complaints really, and you could sort of see in his face when he got dismissed. That was the downside. I mean, for Doncaster, I mean, it was obviously they're on an even more rotten run than Bradford. One win in 10. It was a big game for both clubs, but sort of looking at the wider perspective of the league table, probably a bigger one for Bradford, because you can talk about Wembley, this, that and the other, but Rovers look really, I don't know what Stuart thinks, but I'm starting to get pretty worried about them. They're too close to the bottom of the table for comfort. The only good thing about Tuesday night was that Harrogate did them a favour by beating Sutton, and obviously Rovers go to Sutton, third bottom against second from bottom. I think there's a gap of 7 points, but if Rovers lose that game, the alarm bells will be really reverberating for me. And factoring as well, they lost at Bradford, but it looks like a few more additions to a treatment room, which has really been pretty packed all season. Connor Carty, the loan, he came off just before half time. Luke Molyneux, who's he's a sort of player who can create something at his best and produce game turning moments. He was injured beforehand. Doncaster are waiting on the prognosis of both of them. He didn't look in a particularly good way, Carty, when he was helped off just before half time, but that was exacerbated by what happened at the end. Ben Close, who I thought was arguably Doncaster's best player on the night, was stretched off, and it just never rains but pours when you're at the bottom. And they're sort of low on confidence, looks like low on numbers again. And looking at aside from the result at with Harrogate beating Sutton, the only other sort of bright spot for me was seeing Richard Wood come back. He's obviously had a lot of problems with his calf. He's not played since the end of September, November, and in the position they're in, they've conceded all manner of poor goals in his absence. Obviously five from crosses against Stockport on Saturday, and obviously they conceded five at home not so long against Morecambe. In desperate need of his leadership, organisation skills, character, call it what you want. And if they can just get, a dozen games out of him between now and the end of the season, hopefully that will drag them to safety. I think he could be a massive figure for Doncaster in the weeks go forward. And, I worry about them as well at goalkeeper as well. Obviously, Ian Lawler's out with a pretty serious injury, and there's a lot on the shoulders of Lewis Jones, and without wanting to pick on him, he's had some struggles, and I just wonder if obviously the clock's ticking before the window, maybe trying to get some you know, another goalkeeping option maybe, but we'll just have to wait and see in that regard. But yeah, it's I think the alarm bells are ringing, and they've got, you know, a huge game at Sutton, and you just hope for Doncaster's sake that they can wrap Richard Wood up in cotton wool and get him out there ordering and organising the troops, and they can somehow get a result, because they do look vulnerable to me at the minute.
Yeah, I think this has to be a kick really for both of these teams. I think from Bradford's perspective, it's another wasted season, you know, in league terms. It's another year they're going to be stuck in League Two. They'll be down there since 2019, and they really shouldn't be down there, you know, consistently, considering what they've got to work with. But, you know, same as we were talking about Sheffield United, the rebuild doesn't wait until the summer. How you finish this season, showing a bit of fight, showing a bit of positivity, I think is a big part of it. And obviously, if they can get to Wembley and win the thing, it's not beyond them by any means. That there's your positivity straight away. You know, they've got to really just find something to give supporters to cling to, you know, especially when we get around to season ticket renewal times. I mean, we know how big the Bradford, you know, bigger factor the Bradford crowd is. You want those people renewing the season tickets and coming back for next year. But, you know, you've got to be producing football and just giving them something that they want to come back for. So that's how Bradford have got to use this. Doncaster, I couldn't agree more. I mean, just before Leon started talking, I'm looking closely at the bottom of that league table, because Doncaster do not half need a kick up the backside, you know, to be in the spot above the relegation zone in a season that we started with talk about competing for promotion. It's just not good enough. I mean, we were saying late last season that the demise Doncaster were on could, you know, this downward spiral could drag them to relegation, but it's, you know, it's genuinely becoming a worrying prospect now. Say 7-point gap with a game in hand, that should be reasonably comfortable. But as Leon points out, the fact that they're playing Sutton next, you know, that could easily be down to 4 points, and then you're into really twitchy territory, because, you know, not only are you reducing the gap, you're obviously giving Sutton some hope as well. So this really needs to be a wake-up call for them. Hopefully, as Leon says, Richard Wood's organisation does make that big difference for them, because I'm sure he's been a really big miss this season. We know what he's capable of, and to be fair, what he's not capable of at this stage of the career. You know, they need to. I'd be more comfortable if they could sort of build a back three around him and protect him a little bit, but it needs those other individuals. There's too many individuals in that squad. Leon's right about the injuries. They've been brutal for Doncaster this season. But nevertheless, there's not enough people in that dressing room, not by a long way, who can look themselves in the mirror and say, I've played to my full capabilities this season. Yeah, and, you know, they need to start doing that. Again, as I said, for Sheffield United, even just from a selfish perspective, whether it be to earn themselves a move away or a new contract or whatever, professional pride is the most important thing. These lads are not doing what they're capable of. Doncaster Rovers, for all the faults they have as a club, for all the difficulties they've had this season, they still should not be 22nd in League Two. And individuals have got to look hard at themselves and ask, am I doing enough? Can I raise my game? And I think more often than not, the answer should be yes, I can.
Yeah.
I think they've got to realise in the here and now, Stuart, that they've got to be in the trenches, haven't they? And it sounds a bit corny, but, you know, just roll up the sleeves. They're in a battle. And I remember not so long back, I can't remember the exact day of the season. It was the season that went down to the to League Two under Darren Ferguson. It was probably 6-7 years ago. And they just sort of dripped into the into the relegation positions. It was starting to drop about this time of year, and then they fell into it in I think it must have been about March, Easter time. And there was a little bit of a realised, sort of a feeling then, well, we're a little bit too good, we've got enough, we'll be okay. And they didn't. They actually, you know, fell into it and went down. So I just hope that they don't make the same mistakes of that time, because, you know, they're in dangerous waters at the minute, and, you know, that's where you hope that the senior professionals, such as Richard Wood, and, you know, they've got a few others, the Joe Ironsides of this world, just can be figures that others can rally around, because as it stands, they're in a bit of trouble.
Yeah, and they need to accept that, don't they, Liam? Because we've seen in numerous leagues, all, you know, in many, many seasons, as you've just said, teams thinking that they're safe and just slowly sleepwalking down the table. And it's that sort of feeling that we're okay, we're not having a great season, but we've got enough of a cushion that we're going to be fine. It doesn't always work like that. And they say 7 points sounds a lot on paper. When you think about it, it's only two wins and a draw. Mm-hmm. You know, it's a week, exactly. So there needs to be some real honest conversations in that Doncaster dressing room. And then there just needs to be, as I say, just players start performing to their ability, because at the moment they're letting themselves down as much as anyone else.
Yeah.
I think it'll be interesting, Grant McCann's take on it as well. Do you sort of shield the players, or do you sort of say, look, we're in a fight here, you've got to roll up your sleeves, or else, you know, there's a chance we could go down. So that's another part of it, isn't it, that psychology?
Absolutely. And of course, he may say one thing out in public and one behind closed doors. So we shouldn't necessarily be too critical if he's coming out saying things that sound a little naive or deluded to us, so long as he is actually laying down the law to them. Yeah, behind closed doors.
And finally for this week, we look to Stuart for his player of the week before turning to Leon for his team of the week. So Stuart, who has caught your eye this week?
Well, I think I'm going to go for Jack Muldoon this week after his two goals on Tuesday. Mm-hmm. I mean, Harrogate are having an absolutely tremendous time of it. They're 1 point outside the playoff places as we speak. They've made no new additions in January. They've made James Belshaw's emergency loan permanent, so you could count that in. But when you think that they've lost Luke Armstrong and that Josh Marsh has obviously had his injury problems, Jack Muldoon's just stepped forward and you know, done what he's done so many times over the years for Harrogate Town. Got the goals and kicked them on, and you know, as Leon says, we've sort of got to double reason to be pleased with Harrogate's victory at Sutton because of the help it's done to Doncaster Rovers too. But that's three in his last two games. He's got five goals since Christmas. Great to see, you know, one of the stalwarts of Harrogate's rise up through the leagues, continuing to produce, and long may it continue.
And Leon, which team has caught your eye?
Yeah, well, Stuart for the second, I think it's the second week in a row. Stormy Thunder once again. Yeah, look, it wasn't a particularly good week, was it? Let's be honest, when we looked at the results from the weekend, although everyone wasn't playing, it's got to be Harrogate Town, hasn't it? I mean, yeah. You know, at the start of the season, we're talking about Harrogate, Doncaster and Bradford and... you know, without being disrespectful to Harrogate, not too many people would have had Harrogate down as a team that would be, you know, right in the playoff mix and having a tilt for, you know, potentially getting promoted. So, you know, all power to Harrogate. You know, they've had some sticky-ish times, haven't they, in the last couple of seasons, and you know, tests of the Metland character and have gone through it, and they're having a bit more fun now. They've won three in a row, six wins in eight. I know in the past they've had issues with home form, this and that, and they seem to have overcome that. And they're having some fun pushing for the playoffs, and long may it continue. I think they've only been beaten once in the league since the end of November. That's consistent form. they've obviously got some unity and certainly confidence there, and you know, some goal scorers as well, as Stuart's mentioned in Muldoon. So yeah, it's a happy ship at Harrogate, and fair play to them.
And you know, great to see in a division where you've got Stockport throwing money around like there's no tomorrow. You know, we all know about the Wrexham story. Notts County are only a point above Harrogate Town, and obviously you've got the class of 92 and all the profile that brings Salford. You've got, you know, Bradford's crowds. Yeah. Great to see a club which doesn't attract big crowds, can't throw big money around, just, you know, having success just through, you know, good coaching. And you know, good player identification. That's what it should be all about in League Two. So whenever we see a team doing that, it's really good to see.
Yeah,
and there's always a chance in that division. You know, you can easily have a modest first half of the season, but obviously with the way that the position, you know, the league is structured, you know, you can still finish in that sort of seventh spot and get promoted. And you know, you look back just before Christmas, what was it, Bradford, I think they'd won five or six in a row, haven't they, in all competitions. There was talk of them, if they could maintain that form, they could be the ones who could, you know, have a march towards the top seven, potentially. But in the event, it's Harrogate.
YorkshirePost.co.uk.
Many thanks to Stuart Rayner and Leon Wapshall, who will doubtless join us again soon for more discussions on the Yorkshire football scene. But don't forget, you can keep up to date with all the football news across Yorkshire and beyond by logging on to our website at yp.sport@nationalworld.com, or if you search for Yorkshire Post Sport, Yorkshire Post Football, or even Sheffield Sport on Facebook, you can find us there as well. If you have any questions for our writers, you can get in touch using those various Twitter or Facebook pages, or email us directly with the subject matter as footballtalkpodcast@yp.sport@nationalworld.com. As ever, many thanks for listening, look after yourselves, and bye for now.